Stutt. I'm president of SCOPE, which is the Shooters Committee on Political Education in New York State. On January 15th of last year, 2013, the governor of New York State signed the New York Safe Act, which was a sweeping gun control act that changed 54 separate sections of the law. We may not have seen action on the assault weapons ban on the federal level, but it is definitely alive and well at the state level. New York law passed, and shortly after that, within a few months, a similar law passed in Connecticut, Maryland, and Colorado as well. Now, most of those laws are being challenged in court, all of those have failed at the district court level, and they're going to the circuit court. The New York and Connecticut case are going to the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. Maryland case will be in the Fourth Circuit. You'll be hearing more about those cases from some of the attorneys coming up. And it's likely that the Second Circuit will probably uphold those laws. They have not been very gun-friendly in the past. You know, everybody wants to take their case to the court and have it declared unconstitutional to protect our Second Amendment rights. But the trouble is the courts are not necessarily your friend when it comes to the Second Amendment. They tend to cost more than anybody thinks they should. They take longer. And even when you win, you usually only have a partial victory, and you tend to lose some things along the way with it. What's really needed to push back on these overreaching gun control laws is action at the ballot box. Colorado residents last year sent shockwaves across the country when they had recall elections, and they sent a number of their legislators packing after passing these laws. This whole round of new gun control laws on the state level started in New York State with the NY Safe Act passed by Governor Cuomo in the middle of the night using a message of necessity. And if we're really going to push back on this, it's got to be stopped in New York. Political pundits like to say that Governor Andrew Cuomo can't be beat, that New York is too liberal, that he has too much money, there's too many people in New York City to outvote, on and on and on. I beg to differ. They said the same thing about the senior Cuomo, Mario Cuomo, right up until the day he lost his election to George Pataki in 1994. A few interesting points people should know. The New York Safe Act was opposed by 52 county legislators out of 62 counties in New York State. 52 county legislators passed resolutions asking the governor and the legislature to overturn this law. It's opposed by the New York State sheriffs. The majority of the sheriffs in New York State are openly saying they are not going to enforce this law. It's opposed by the New York State Association of County Clerks. And we have resolutions in opposition from over 335 municipal governments across New York State. For the first time in recent memory, a sitting governor in New York State was challenged in the primary by his own party. And in the recent primary on September 9th, 4 out of 10 voting Democrats voted against Andrew Cuomo. He actually lost 30 out of 62 states in that primary election. Including around the Capitol area, where in some counties he lost by a 3-to-1 margin. And this is despite outspending his opponent by something like 30-to-1. In the average gubernatorial election in New York State, there are about 4.5 million votes cast. In New York State, there are somewhere around 6 million legal gun owners. A legal gun owner is not a convicted felon, at least 18 years of age, and not adjudicated mentally defective. In short, every single one of them is an eligible voter. And there has been a massive effort to get out the vote in New York State for the last year and a half, ever since this act passed. In addition, there is a lot of energy coming from the churches in New York State. Andrew Cuomo has been pushing for late-term abortions to allow abortion in New York State up to the moment of birth. Common Core is another huge issue in New York State. It's been passed and it's going around the schools. It's very unpopular. And Rob Astorino, who is challenging Andrew Cuomo for the governor's race, and what I think is a genius move, put a new nominating petitions out for a new line on the ballot, Stop Common Core. Got over 82,000 petitions and actually has a new ballot line, Stop Common Core. So there are a lot of people out there who don't care that much about the gun issue, who may never want to vote for a Republican, but they're vehemently against this Common Core, and I think it's going to be a much bigger issue in the election than a lot of people think. In a demonstration earlier this year at a Andrew Cuomo fundraiser, we had something like 500 activists out there holding up signs demonstrating against Andrew Cuomo, but the teachers' union actually had three times that number. There were over 2,000 people at that, and Common Core was one of the biggest issues. New York State gun owners are energized like I've never seen in my lifetime. In fact, I've never seen anywhere since the passage of the SAFE Act. The NSSF has said that there's probably about 1 million guns in New York State that now qualify as illegal assault weapons, and they're all supposed to be registered, but with the state police. State police aren't giving us any numbers, but the highest reports we've heard is an estimate of about 5,000 guns being registered. That's a compliance rate of about 0.5%. Everywhere you go in New York State, you see yard signs up. Repeal the SAFE Act. Our organization has been putting them out, and new organizations springing up all over New York State. There's probably a minimum 100,000 of these signs around the state. Andrew Cuomo's protested everywhere he goes. He has to keep his travels secret. He can't tell anybody in advance where he goes, or he finds that he's getting a protest. So Andrew Cuomo can be beat. It's an uphill battle, but we in the gun rights movement are used to pushing boulders up the mountain. The Colorado recall surprised the anti-gunners last year, and it derailed a lot of gun control efforts across the nation. If Andrew Cuomo is beaten in this election, it will send shockwaves across the country. And I would submit to you that this may be the most important election this November 4th in the country. If reelected, the New York SAFE Act will be just the beginning. And it will not stay in New York State. But if he loses, the gun rights movement across the entire country will be advanced. Thank you very much.
Sean, thank you.
I want to thank everybody for taking interest in your rights and being here today. It's so important. One thing we've heard over and over again are how important these elections are that are coming up. Whether it's the ballot act in the state of Washington, and you have to remember, folks, that when you talk about universal background check, none of us want evil, bad people with firearms. But universal background check equals universal registration, and then that equals universal confiscation. Look it up. It's history. It happens every time. Let's not stop the battle. Let's not quit the fight. I traveled over the United States and have for a while. I was part of the Colorado recall because I just couldn't sit on the couch and watch it happen. I saw the rights and heard about the rights that were taken away from our fellow Americans in Colorado, and I just couldn't sit home. And so I jumped on a plane, asked my wife, Debbie, is it all right if I use a little bit of vacation time and head out to Colorado? And I did that because our rights are borderless, folks. I want to congratulate everybody in this room that had anything to do with concealed carry in Illinois. What a victory, and thank you so much, and I appreciate that. As the leader of Buckeye Firearms Association, I'm going to talk to you today a little bit about some of the victories we've had this year. But I also want you all to keep in mind that these victories aren't in a vacuum. A lot of you are just as responsible for the victories in Ohio that we are, because you talk to your friends, you talk to your neighbors, you talk to your legislature. It's a culture. We're the good guys. And the more and more people that find that out, they can't go anywhere without seeing a good guy or hearing a good guy, it gets that much easier for all of us. I want to thank you for that also. We've had about 28 pieces of pro-gun legislation that is going to improve concealed carry in the state of Ohio. I'm only going to talk about a few of them that really affect everybody. One of the first ones is automatic reciprocity with concealed carry filing. So if you have a concealed carry permit from your state and your state recognizes Ohio, we recognize you and we're going to stop playing games from there on out. Right now, it's up to the Attorney General to negotiate concealed carry reciprocity, and we're ending that. And also, if you live in Indiana, for example, Ohio issues no out-of-state permits. Ohio doesn't recognize Indiana. So people that drive across the river and work in Ohio, they have to leave their constitutional or Second Amendment rights at the river. So what the piece of legislation that we have waiting to be signed says, if you work from another state in the state of Ohio, and we don't recognize your permit, and you can show proof that you work there, then you can carry on your permit. So that's a great common sense piece of legislation that's waiting to be signed. And unfortunately, everything that we've done, everything that we've passed, and everything that's waiting has to wait until a lame duck. Our governor or whoever decided that probably for their electoral aspirations that it had to wait until a lame duck. And that's kind of common for the state of Ohio. Finally, we've eliminated the duty to retreat in Ohio. We've always had the duty to retreat, and that's gone. So when that passes, that duty will be gone. We have the Castle Doctrine, so we no longer have the duty to retreat in our homes and our automobiles, but still everywhere else we have that duty to retreat. And so that's important to us and for everybody who comes in the state of Ohio also. For you hunters, deer hunters, and you're used to hunting with rifles, Buckeye Farms Association, we worked hand-in-hand with the Department of Natural Resources. And now in Ohio, you can use rifle for deer hunting. The pistol caliber cartridge isn't straight-walled, but finally we can hunt deer with rifles. And that just goes to show you how you can work together for common core and for common elements that we all need. A couple other things I want to talk about. The rest of my time, until I get the hook, because I have a feeling I could be going too long and I may get the hook, and I understand that. But what I want to talk about is what we have been doing at Buckeye Farms Association and what we have been doing in the state of Ohio to protect our most precious resources, our children. We've been going out throughout the state now for about 2 years and arming our teachers, our school districts, our administrators, and everybody that we can possibly do. About 2 weeks before Sandy Hook, I received a phone call from a rabbi who was also the superintendent of a local school. And he said, "Sean, what can I do to protect my kids? I'm a concealed carry holder. I'm skilled with a firearm, and I know at times the only thing that I can do to protect my children is be the good guy with a gun. What can I do?" As an attorney and a criminal defense attorney, I had never really looked at that. And I said, "Let me do some research, and I'll get back to you." What I found was that somewhere along the line, our state legislature had the wisdom to provide for provisions in the Ohio Revised Code that laid out exactly what a school district could do. In Ohio, the school board has within its purview the authority to authorize anybody they want to be able to carry a firearm in the school safety zone. So I started out with that, and I was smart enough at that point in time to do a very detailed memo, because I had a feeling that more than just he and I were going to have this discussion. Suddenly, I published the memo on Buckeye Farms Association's webpage. We put most of the things that we write, and if we're in leadership, we put on there. So I put that on there also, and a few other people read it. 2 weeks later, Sandy Hook. 2 weeks after that, I started getting phone calls related to how can we arm our schools. And where do you think these phone calls came from? Who do you think started making these phone calls first? The sheriffs. The first telephone conversation I had was with the sheriff of Pike County, and I'll get into a little bit more of that later. Then just before that phone call, Jim Irvine, the president of Buckeye Farms Association, and I were having a conversation. We were anguishing together over what had happened to these poor children. The fact that we have school-aged children, and what can we do to protect our kids? We all knew what the answer was, but for some reason, none of us had ever said it. And Jim said, "Sean, We're going to do everything we can possibly do to arm every teacher in the state of Ohio and take it to every school district there is. All that was an idea. We had no idea how to get this accomplished. We had no idea how to do it. But then the phone call from the sheriff. And then a state representative, that sheriff state representative called me, jumped in the car, about a 2-hour drive. I was told I was going to meet with some administrators. Didn't know what to expect. You never do. As a pro-gun advocate, you're never quite sure what's going to happen. So after you have your ears sheared back a little bit, you're kind of leery of what's going to happen. So I walked into a room. In the room, 4 sheriffs, 7 school superintendents from various school districts, members of the PTA, and everybody else you can imagine. And so I'm looking at this group of people, and I'm saying, oh boy, or something like that. Because I didn't know what was going to be next. Then all of a sudden, folks, here's Sean Maloney from Buckeye Farms Association. He's going to talk about arming teachers. Crickets. And so now I'm really starting to get concerned as to what's going on. Can I have a little bit more time? I need a lot more time. So actually what started happening was after this conversation, and after I started speaking with everybody, no opposition. I can probably safely say that Buckeye Firearms, either myself or Jim Irvine, we've probably armed over 50 school districts in the state of Ohio right now. We don't care who. We don't want to know who, because actually as part of the law, nobody has a right to know the safety and security plans of any school or school district. But I can tell you that not one place that I've appeared and not one place that I've spoken to has anybody ever said that's stupid. In fact, I had a sheriff come up to me and he said, I'm here today to tell you how stupid of an idea this was. And then he said, too, my kids go to the school. I'm 45 minutes away. That's the only answer. And over again this happened. And so I'm telling you folks, talk about it. It all started with conversation and an idea. If you talk to your school teachers, if you know school board members anywhere, start talking to them. Buckeye Firearms has spent over $250,000. We raised every penny, about $250,000. To this point, we've armed over 300 teachers, administrators. They've been there from Pennsylvania, from Colorado, from New York State. We're spreading it. We had people standing before the legislature in Pennsylvania trying to get this passed and trying to get it done. I can talk a lot more about arming teachers and what we've been doing, and the fight's not over. We're going to keep raising money, and every penny we raise, we're going to make sure that our most precious resource and the worst of all gun-free zones is corrected. So thank you.
And now I'd like to ask Richard Pearson of ISRA to come to the mic and remind the gentleman to please say who you are so we can get it taken care of for the taping. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Richard Pearson. Thank you. And I'm with the Illinois State Rifle Association. And welcome to the last state to pass concealed carry. So, thank you. How many people are from Illinois? Hold up your hand. How many people have concealed carry licenses? Hold up your hand. Oh, good. Good. I didn't get the exact figure, but right now we're approaching 85,000 applications for the state of Illinois. And state police didn't return my phone call. What a surprise. And shocked. But, you know, I appreciate all the efforts of all you guys that have attended these conferences and all the people from out of state that have attended these conferences, because things like this is what drives us, and we've learned things already today, and we'll learn more things later. So the Illinois law is not perfect. We know that. We know it's going to take about 5 years to get it done. But there are some things in it that are good for the out-of-state people. We do not have reciprocity yet, but the state police have authority to establish that. We do have safe haven in your vehicle. So as long as you're traveling through the state in your vehicle, you can be armed, have the firearm on you or loaded firearm in your vehicle. And that's perfectly okay for if you have a permit from another state. Now, if you get out and gas up your car, You know, you're supposed to leave your firearm in a car, lock it in the trunk or something like that. But if it's concealed, well, what am I? Anyway, but you know, we have a lot of restrictions in the state, and some interesting things have happened with that. One of the things that happened was, you know, of course, banks, you know, how gun owners always rob banks, not bad guys, but gun owners rob banks, right? So many banks were starting to put up no gun signs, which is a little 4x6 sign that you're supposed to put up. Well, it turns out a lot of banks immediately heard from their clients that if you put up that no gun sign, we're going to have a no money in your bank sign. And so a lot of banks, one bank had 23 branches, and the gun signs came up one day and went down the next. There are some banks, however, that are slow learners, and I know one bank that had $3 million vanish out of their accounts in one day. Not that I care. So you have to take offensive action. When it comes to the Illinois law, you know, we have safe haven, we have restaurant carry, even if they serve alcohol, if it's under 50% of their sales and that sort of thing. So that's going along. Of course, we have fights in the city of Chicago. But one of the things that happened is we preempted handguns from being under the jurisdiction of any local municipality. So we have handgun preemption in the state. Now we have to get rifles and shotguns. Okay. We also have preemption for the transportation of rifles and shotguns. So, you know, we're whittling them down. You know, they like to nibble at us. We'll just nibble back. You know, that's what we're going to do. One of the things that happens in every state is that when a law is passed, some governing body, whether it's Department of Transportation, Human Services, whatever, has rulemaking authority. And there, folks, I want to warn you that that is something you have to watch. Okay? That's like playing with a pit viper in the dark, rulemaking authority. And so JCAR, which is the Joint Commission on Rules, which are made up of senators and reps from both parties, have to approve these rules. Before, many of us, most people, don't realize that these rules have to be posted, that, you know, they have to be discussed and that sort of thing. And so we have been seeing intrusions into the concealed carry law by these groups, or by the state police, actually, and probably the attorney general's behind it, who's up for election this year, by the way, Illinois voters. But we have been very active, myself, particularly Belinda and Mike Rowe, in the rulemaking authority, and so we have been battling back against them. I want to tell you something. They're not used to that, but they're going to have to get used to it. And so every state, when a law is passed, has rulemaking authority given to somebody. Be careful of that and watch it. It is something that can come up and get you. For example, the FOID Act that we have in Illinois, which we're now approaching 2 million gun owners in the state, which is bad, up 500,000 from 4 years ago, there's a thing that you can't handle firearms and ammunition unless you have a FOID card. That was never an original FOID Act. That was rulemaking authority that established those in the 80s. So they snuck it in there. And, you know, gun owners always seem to be slightly unaware of what's going on until you get bit pretty hard. But I'm telling you, watch the rulemaking authority. How much time I got? 1 minute and 55 seconds. Here we go. All right. So legislatively, we're going to see all kinds of attacks in the upcoming session. Thank God the legislature's out of session now, so we're safe until November. But we're going to see all kinds of attacks to try to push and tighten up and make more restrictive the Illinois law. And, of course, we're going to be there doing all kinds of things to push it back. So I expect to see probably 60 bills coming up. And so, and we have to watch all the bills because in Illinois, instead of going through the judiciary, it goes through mental health. It can come through conservation. It can come through human services. So, you know, you're really on guard duty. That's why we have four lobbyists down there in Springfield that the State Rifle Association feeds. So if you're not a member, the membership booth is out there to the right, left. Anyway, so we're going to see all that that coming up. One dangerous thing we have two veto sessions coming up after the election and one general session after the election, which means we're going to be dealing with lame ducks. And lame ducks are very treacherous. You can't predict anything you're going to do. You really have to be down there. And we'll be starting a veto session. Not that we have anything at veto, but we'll be contacting all the lame ducks, trying to brace them up. So, anyway, so that's the situation in Illinois. And I'll be glad to talk to you more about it later. And I'm down to 13 seconds and I quit early. Bye.
Philip?
Okay, my name is Philip Van Cleve. I'm the president of the Virginia Citizens Defense League. Thank you very much. Illinois is my birth state. I was born in Kankakee. I grew up in Hillside, not too far from here. And, wow, you know, I never thought in my lifetime I'd be seeing this happen. So I'm really proud of what Illinois has done. And actually, they did a really good job right out of the box, considering where they were coming from. And I have my gun, loaded gun in my car on the way up here with my Virginia permit. And I think they've done a spectacular job. And I'm sure we'll hear more of that as the time goes on. It's another quick one. The Gun Saves Life. They put out their little newspaper. I've been seeing that for years. It is spectacular. Those guys do a great job. All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about Virginia. We had some elections, we ended up getting three anti-gunners in the top statewide position of governor, lieutenant governor, and attorney general. However, that really doesn't portend as much as it might seem to. The governor squeaked in with 2.5% of the vote, and we had the vote was a little split up. There was a Libertarian Party candidate running, and that kind of split the vote. He took a little bit from both sides, but it was very tight. And with the attorney general, it was, I mean, you know, you were counting, you know, you were just watching the votes change as to who was going to win by, you know, 10, 15, 20 votes. I mean, it was that tight. The only one that wasn't was lieutenant governor, and the Republican was a little too controversial. However, looking at the House, oh, that's a whole different situation. The House is pretty much a supermajority, and we have a big majority of the House that's pro-gun. So gun control, getting it through, is pretty much got a zero chance, and I'll talk a little bit about that. Actually, we had a very sad case where a little boy was killed because some idiot fired a gun in the air on the 4th of July a year ago. And it came down and hit this little boy walking with his dad and killed him instantly. So the political ambulance chasers came running up. Said, oh, you know, we got to do something about celebratory gunfire. We already have laws on the books. If they ever catch the idiot that did that, he's up for manslaughter. And we have plenty of other ones to cover firing a gun in the air. But, oh, no, they wanted to do something about this. And they wanted, of course, tug at the heartstrings of everybody by calling it Brandon's Law. But we're firmly against it. We don't need more laws that overlap others. We don't need more felonies thrown around randomly, especially the way that was written. It was way too easy to end up being a felon. It was kind of in the eyes of the beholder as to whether you were even shooting in the air. What is into the air? Every gunshot I fire, I know, goes into the air. I mean, it has to get to the target by going through air. So, anyhow, we ended up killing, you know, getting that bill where it had nowhere to go. They couldn't even come close to getting traction. So they completely redid it. There was a little loophole in the law dealing with reckless endangerment and the malicious wounding. I'm sorry, and that's what the bill ended up fixing. And they took off Brandon's name. It had nothing to do with that anymore. Of course, the press touted it as something to do with celebratory gunfire because they never read any of this stuff. They just kind of tout it. But that we thought was reasonable because it put the onus was there. You had to knowingly and wantonly and recklessly handle a gun knowing that you were endangering lives. And then only if you then wounded somebody and wounded them seriously, then you got a felony charge. And we said, now that's what a gun law is for. You know, you set the boundary and somebody's recklessly and knowingly doing something and then something bad happens. Okay, well, too bad. You know, that's why we have penalties. So, the governor has been playing some games. In his zeal to show what a macho governor he was when it came to being anti-gun, he got $2 million from Bloomberg, I think, when he was running the election, that bought him maybe the 2.5% that he won by. We had a bill that clarified law in Virginia. It was just a clarification. That's all it was. It said you could have, without a permit, you can have a loaded gun in your glove box, your console, or any compartment or container. Anybody could do this without a permit when they're in the vehicle. And so we wanted to clarify because the wording originally said secured. The courts agreed with VCDL. That meant it didn't have to be locked. So we just had the wording put in, and he vetoed the bill. And yet it had come out with super majorities on both sides, and he vetoed it. But the way the political game played out, they didn't get a chance to override his veto. So that stuck. We didn't lose anything. Actually, we gained a little bit more because the General Assembly even clarified more that this was not about a locked container, but simply a closed. So, you know, it didn't hurt us. But that shows the kind of person we're dealing with in McAuliffe. And now I just learned he's trying to play games with gun shows. He's trying to say that the word vendor could mean anybody at all walking into a gun show that, say, wants to sell a rifle or a handgun, just an attendee, that somehow now that's magically become a vendor under him, where it's never been all the years that we've had a law about gun shows, giving a list of the true vendors, the ones that have actually paid to have a table there. So they're playing other games with that whole thing, so we're going to be jumping into that. And we'll probably get involved in a lawsuit over that. But he's doing the Obama loose and fast with stuff, rewriting things on the fly as if he's part of the legislative branch. But he's got the state police, he's the boss of the state police. We had a few things going on electorally. Eric Cantor, just simply, who, by the way, was my representative and the majority leader in the House, he was not responding to gun owners. He was basically ignoring everybody in his district, and he forgot that you really have to still answer to the people in your district. And so he had a contender going against him, Dave Bratt, and Cantor lost. Gun owners had it with being ignored and treated like mushrooms. And he paid the price for that. And nobody was seeing that coming. But, we did. We saw that it was going to be very interesting. Senator Mark Warner, who was pretty good on guns as a governor, he signed our full preemption law in 2004, really turned to jelly as soon as he got to the Senate. I call it Senate brain rot. You know, whoever ends up there, suddenly they lose all their brains. They drip out on the floor. And so he's a victim of that, and so Ed Gillespie's running against him, but the problem is that Gillespie's not returned our survey, and Warner hasn't yet either. There's Libertarian running who has, and we're going to keep pressing him. We need that survey. We want to know what you'll do in the future if certain things end up on your desk. So overall, I think we're going to do well. We already have the House. I think we're going to take back the Senate. As far as right now, it's like a tie. It looks like we're going to have it back. So pro-gun will control the Senate. Anyhow, I thank you all for coming out to this very worthwhile event, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Jim Wallace.
She puts the timer up here for me. That's funny. Hi, I'm Jim Wallace. I'm a Massachusetts gun owner. Hi, Jim. All right, everybody do me a favor. If you're able, how about you stand up, give it a little stretch. Come on, I'm starting to see. Come on, stand up, give it a little stretch. Say hi. Yell freedom if you want. You know. The Mad Scotsman up here, right? All right. Are there any children in the room, by the way? Children? Yeah? Yeah? I see every husband raising his hand, but other than that. All right, you can all sit down now. You're good. You're good. I just want to make sure you're awake, that's all. I just want to make sure there weren't any children because I wanted to thank Alan Gottlieb and Juliana and the whole crew for inviting me to a city that sucks worse than Boston. And can you imagine the weekend of the Gun Rights Policy Conference? Somebody actually burns down an FAA building and tries to commit suicide? But I understand the mayor will make a full recovery. And I laugh how the news called it a contractor. Those have different meanings in Chicago. Now, one of the questions I get all the time from about Massachusetts is they say, Jim, you know, come on, you're from Massachusetts, the birthplace of freedom, the Battle of Concord Bridge. Let me tell you a little bit about the history of the real history of Concord Bridge. It actually didn't start the Revolutionary War. It was the British soldiers and the colonists drinking, complaining about the city of Boston, and one guy made a bet and said, I'll tell you what, we'll race to Boston. The loser gets to own it for the rest of their life. We lost. They got back on their ships and took off, and, well, we've owned it ever since. So what are you going to do? Listen, you know, a little over a year and a half ago now, you know, the nation was certainly riveted by the tragic murders and senseless murders in Newtown. And we knew going in, as soon as we heard the news, your first reaction is to the kids and the teachers that lost their lives needlessly. And I got to tell you, man, a single can of pepper spray changes that whole event. And we'll get to that later. But we also knew as gun owners, we knew what was coming. And a lot of firearms associations across the country, states, local, decided to kind of curl up in their shell, and their best strategy was to remain quiet. And I had a few board members right away email me and say, Jim, what do you think we should do? I said, I think we should take every microphone, put in our face, and send our message out there. This is not our people. This is not what we stand for. If this SOB was still alive, we'd make sure he was in jail for the rest of his life. And we put out our message. Between Sandy Hook and the end of February, Gun Owners Action League took part in 150 interviews, TV, news, radio, you name it, we did it. We got our message out there. That was free media for us. And unfortunately, the people who kind of turned into their shell, well, you know, some of them got hammered pretty hard. And I'm not going to blame them for the taxes they took, because usually that's what we do across the country as gun owners when something like this happens. But I decided not to. And what was kind of interesting was the media and the general public wasn't really ready for the way we handled this. Like I said, I took advantage of every interview I could get. Oh, there was one I turned down, and legitimately I thought it was a joke. I actually had a news radio news station from Jamaica call me and wanted to do a 3 a.m. interview. Apparently they're smoking a lot of ganja, and they're staying up late in Jamaica looking for gun interviews. But I did turn that one down. But I took all kinds of interviews across the state, and you can imagine, you all faced it. You can think of the legislation that was coming our way. You know, one gun a month, which we call the Lawful Citizens Imprisonment Act. And, you know, Newswoman was interviewing me about that, and she says, well, how many guns do you need? And I said, well, how many shoes do you need? And she said, well, shoes aren't dangerous. You never met my mom. I could be behind three separate closed doors and that shoe would find the back of my head somehow, I swear to God. Well, I was also being interviewed about, they tried to pass this thing in Massachusetts because of this, about mandatory gun insurance, which really doesn't exist. So I'm on this news station, and the legislator that introduced the bill is with me, and this news anchor, she's asking me all kinds of questions about, well, Jim, you know, doesn't this make sense? She goes, after all, Massachusetts, we have mandatory car insurance. And I said, well, that makes sense. Those things are dangerous. And she goes, oh, come on, Jim. You know, guns are dangerous. And I said, listen, last year in Massachusetts, we lost two people to accidental gun deaths. And those two were actually gangbangers, and Darwin took over. We lost 400 people in Massachusetts to accidental automobile accidents versus two to guns. I also said that, you know, if you look at accidental car insurance, car insurance as being mandatory, she said, well, you know, I said, that's not a civil right. And she goes, well, what about health insurance? And she goes, that's a civil right. And I said, well, I'm not going to get in that argument with you. And I said, but the purpose of health insurance is to gain cheaper access to higher quality health care. If you're willing to give us cheaper access to higher quality guns, we might buy that insurance. I was also in a forum with a guy I just nicknamed Jerry Springer because his name is Jerry and he comes from Springfield and he's a meathead. And he's trying to argue about the AR bill, the HICAP bill, and all this kind of stuff. And he finally says to me, he goes, listen, he goes, do you think if things really came to a head that you guys with your little rifles could take on the U.S. Air Force? And I looked right down the table at him and I said, who says they're your friends? Those people don't like you. The men and women in those jets flying those planes are our friends. And by the way, if it hit the fan and you see a little red light on the hood of your car and you start hearing this sound, it's already too late. So listen, when you're getting into these debates, change the tone. Don't thump your chest. Make them look like fools because they don't know what they're talking about. In Massachusetts, we changed the debate. We faced a tremendous piece of legislation against this issue. You name it, it was in there. From insurance, to storing your guns at the club, to limiting magazines. Oh, for all those belt-fed guys, Deval Patrick wanted to limit belts to 7 rounds. You'd have been expert reloaders. We changed how we did business. We changed how we approached the general public. We just passed a bill the other day, well, I should say a couple of months ago now. We completely reversed the bill. There were a couple of things in it we didn't like. But because of the work we did, because of dealing with the media the way we did, we actually turned the tables. We turned the tide in Massachusetts. And just an example, for the first time in decades, Massachusetts junior shooters can now take part in handgun in AR-15 matches. For the first time in decades, women can now carry pepper spray without a license. For the first time in decades, because police chiefs were delaying your license renewals as a way to get rid of you, your license is now good until they finish the process, so they're stuck. The chiefs in Massachusetts wanted full discretionary authority over even your long gun license. They already have it over the handguns, but we fixed that too. The first time in Massachusetts history, you can actually contest a restriction on your handgun license. For the first time in Massachusetts history, the onus of proving you unsuitable is now on the chief. It's no longer your onus to prove yourself suitable. I have a little dinger going off here, so that means I'm supposed to probably get off the stage. But listen, folks, make sure you control the discussion. Make sure you control the argument. Do not take the premise of their questions. One of the most famous questions I ever had was, do you think assault weapons are more dangerous than handguns? Don't answer that question. Don't take the premise of their question. Don't take the premise of their argument. Turn it on them. Use their own words against them. And you can win just like we did in Massachusetts. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We're going to take a short break, a 15-minute break right now.